more and more, I think that probably a lot of good game design is about knowing where to stop. It reminds me of something my dad's always said about haggling. To be a good haggler, you know, in a market or whatever, you need to know when to shut up. I think that's often the case of game design. And I like to leave a lot to the player. I like to try and empower them. It's a tricky balance because you don't want to just leave them out in the cold thinking, so what do I do now? I don't know. I don't have a clue what I'm doing.
You're listening to The Lost Bay Podcast, a show about indie tabletop role-playing games and the people who make them. I'm Iko. This show exists thanks to the support of its patrons. A big shout out to Jacob Marks for becoming a patron recently. Patrons not only support the show and help me give visibility to the guests, amazing TTRPG creators and artists, but they also get free access to digital copies of all my RPG zines. If you want to become a patron too, head to patreon.com/thelostbay. Before we start, a quick reminder that this episode is also available on YouTube with English subtitles, and the full episode transcript is accessible at thelostbaystudio.com. Today my guest is Alfred Valli. Alfred has written and illustrated a few indie RPG zines, but he is most notably known for Lay on Hands, a very unique solo RPG in which you play as a healer in a post-apocalyptic world. We're going to talk a little bit about Lay on Hand, but this episode is going to be focused mainly on Thousand Empty Light, a new upcoming solo RPG written for the sci-fi horror game Mothership. I've seen the draft of the zine and it looks fantastic. It's probably the first, or if not, one of the first solo supplements for Mothership. And by the way, this is the fourth podcast episode on Mothership-related games. That's probably because of my personal interest in horror, but I guess it's also a sign of how much the Mothership community is creative and productive. In the show notes, I've made a little playlist of other Mothership-related interviews. Anyway, let's move on with the show. Here's Alfred talking about his childhood growing up in a strange place in the London suburbs.
Did you grow up in London or in a countryside context? Or
I grew up in London and I live now really not very far from where I grew up. Where I grew up was a place called Blackheath, which is quite unique in London because most of Blackheath is just a big flat piece of grass. You know, the heath itself is amazing. It was an amazing place to grow up. It's called Blackheath because, well, the urban legend that likes to get passed around is that a lot of the bodies from the Black Death were buried here.
Oh.
Which I don't think is true, but I like to believe that one because it lends a certain mystery to it.
I guess that's when you're a kid, that kind of urban legend leads to a lot of speculations and talks and...
Yeah, of course. And there's this really cool place nearby, which we used to call the Dips. And we're always told by parents, don't go there on your own because the dodgy stuff happens there. That was like so mysterious and exciting for me as a child. I used to run around there with my friend and we'd pretend to be like on a mission or...
Oh, yeah. Quick question, have you met, because I have, so it's normal, quote-unquote, thing for me. Have you met healers? Like, are there healers in London suburbs?
I'm going to sound like a fraud, but no, not in any real way, in my experience.
Okay.
I really wanted to hear about your experiences with healers, though.
Well, I grew up in Corsica. In a very rural environment, like extremely rural. And so, it was kind of part of everyday's life. I mean, you watched movies, you played console games, and when something wasn't going well at home, people came to lay hands and do prayers and magic stuff. And half of my family is from northern Italy, from another rural area, quite different culture. But when I went back there to my... This is going to sound strange. I'm not going to put that in the podcast. To see my maternal grandmother, there were old ladies coming to her place and there was this guy who laid hands, like he used to heal fevers, pains, whatever. And quite strangely, he was the Undertaker. of the of the village.
Yeah, and that's a very entrepreneurial approach. You know, good to diversify. You're on Death's side, but also when the bodies aren't coming in, you're helping people.
And how was Alfred as a kid? How was it to be Alfred as a kid or as a teenager?
I guess a lot of time outdoors when I was growing up because of being in the heath, and also because a very big royal park was just on my doorstep, basically, called Greenwich Park. So I used to spend a lot of time on my own just exploring and just poking around, I guess you'd say.
And did you have a nerdy, geeky taste, I don't know, for fantasy or for imaginary worlds?
Yeah, I guess so. I never really saw it as sort of nerddom when I was growing up. Maybe because that's because all my friends are nerds and we just never, you know, came up against, you know, much friction, perhaps. I always thought of myself a bit as the weird one in terms of my creative tastes. From an early age, I got very much used to doing my own thing, having friends, but also having time to myself doing things which I didn't necessarily share with them, if you know what I mean. I think I was the sort of teenager who got very much into the hobby of making things, and so that took up a lot of my time.
And when did tabletop role-playing games get into your playground? How did that start?
That's fairly recent. I think it all begins with board games. I remember going with some friends to visit another friend somewhere else in the country, and someone brought along the Game of Thrones board game. None of us had played it before, and it took us 4-5 hours, and we sort of stumbled through and had to keep referring to the rules and taking breaks. And it went long into the early hours of the morning. But I remember going into work after that weekend and sort of saying proudly, I played a ball game at the weekend and it took 5 hours and I won. But that was obviously the start of a love for me. And, you know, from then on, I remember maybe a year of every Friday we'd play Settlers of Catan almost religiously and listen to 80s music. I don't know why, but it was a very like pure time in my life. And from there, it was quite a natural progression into role-playing games.
Alfred started doing some research on Reddit forums, focusing on small games, games that have a light rule set. He has written several one-page RPGs, experimenting with different sorts of mechanics, and then has moved to bigger games like Lay on Hands. Alfred not only writes, but he also does layout design and art for his games, and he has a very unique style. Alfred's zines look somehow almost retro or vintage, but their style has something pure and simple that makes them extremely contemporary. And as a result, Alfred's production is very much recognizable from one zine to the other. There's like an Alfred's touch.
I don't know exactly how to pinpoint that, but in some ways I feel like I've come to the scene in a non-traditional path, or at least I haven't had necessarily the same sort of background of media experiences than a lot of people. So a lot of the things I tend to draw on exist outside of the role-playing game scene. Things like fine art, for instance, or literature. I studied literature at university, and so that's something that's very close to me, and I've always read quite a lot. So a lot of my reading exists outside of fantasy, and a lot of it is in weird fiction, for instance. And in terms of visual style, I've had to teach myself layouts in the last couple of years, and that's quite similar to it. A lot of the skills I have is just self-taught, trying to sort of tinker with things to the point that I'm happy.
Let's take a specific example, like Lay on Hands.
So Lay on Hands is a solo TTRPG game in which you play as a healer in a post-apocalyptic world. The game has unique resolution mechanics, little puzzles you have to beat against a time constraint using your hands. I'm not going to detail them here, but they're really awesome in terms of fun, in terms of gaming experience. And in terms of visual style, the zine has unique black and white art. The artworks look almost like something from a very distant past or a distant future.
How did you make the art? Do you want to share the technique? I was wondering if there were lino cuts or...
This was born out completely by an accident. I originally wanted to do something similar to lino cuts. My partner is an art teacher, and she brought home one day these prints that she and some of her students had made just using like foam card, basically, like a foam material that you scrape into with a biro or anything you can get your hands on, put ink on top and then print that. And it's almost akin to a lino cut, but it's not quite as clean. And so when I first sat down to make art for Lay on Hands, this is what I tried to do. And I ended up getting the wrong thing. I got foam board, which you can use it to make things like 3D models and things like that. It's quite rigid. If you try and do anything with it, it just likes to almost crumble. It doesn't fall apart structurally, but the surface just sort of crumbles and you don't get neat lines at all. It likes to just sort of cave in on itself. And so I had a day of disappointment when I got this stuff and tried drawing into it. And so I stumbled on this idea of taking a needle and making lots of tiny little holes into the surface of the thing, because it could accept little holes, but not anything more than that. And that was basically the process in a nutshell. So I used to make images on the computer, often sort of composites of public domain imagery and bits of sort of editing here and there. And I'd print those out, stick them to the front of foam board and just prick with a needle through that. And I would take that surface, apply printing ink to it, and print it, basically, and that was that. I'm calling it stick and poke printing, and as you might imagine, the process was very time-consuming.
Yeah, I guess
so. Make my fingers ache. By the end of the project, my hand and my wrists were just in pieces.
How does the writing journey for Lay on Hands start? Where does this project come from?
I don't have a single game that hasn't started in some aspects in the middle of the night, in the dark, which is just a consequence of having two young children. Much of the last few years for me have been spent not sleeping, crouched beside the bed of a child who isn't sleeping either. And it's in that weird, almost surreal time in the middle of the night when you get the sense of the world just slowing down and everything sort of switching off. It's strangely in those moments that I tend to have my best ideas, I think.
When you talk about it, it sounds like it's something that came in your life with the birth of your children. But I was wondering, that kind of intimate relationship with the night and darkness, maybe, is it something that pre-existed? The fact of becoming a father, were you like that, like always, or is it something new?
I've always enjoyed the dark, which I guess is the sort of minority opinion to have. But there's something almost cozy about the dark for me.
Oh, yeah.
I used to do a lot of photography on film. I used to develop my own film. And so I spent lots of time in the photographic darkroom, you know, being in pitch black. And there's just a feeling in that darkness that, I don't know, you don't get it in any other part of your life. And it's a strange, uncanny feeling, unpleasant for some people. But for me, there's a coziness to it, a closeness to the dark.
As I release this episode, Alfred is kickstarting Thousand Empty Light, a Mothership first edition compatible solo adventure. The campaign is in its very last stretch. There's less than 48 hours left. It's really a cool project, and as you can imagine from what Alfred has said in the interview earlier, there's a lot of darkness involved, as in no light at all, as the adventure happens in an underwater dark tunnel. Here's Alfred.
So what I'm working on at the moment is a solo adventure for Mothership called Thousand Empty Light. The whole premise is that the player is hired as part of a big service corporation, and their job is to go into an abandoned tunnel on an abandoned planet and just go through section by section, turning the lights and power on. And that's the sort of simple job that they're given.
I'm sure there's a trick.
Well, exactly, as you might expect with anything related to Mothership. At some point, horror elements come in. And so that experience is, I guess, all about being alone in the dark, up against unfamiliar things and things getting quickly out of hand. One of the central devices for that adventure is that what's guiding your experience of each section is the previous report of the person who came through the area doing much the same job as you, who, curiously, you're not quite sure what happened to them.
Of course, you said it's based on the Mothership system, but I was wondering, we have to expect, I don't know, unusual mechanics or resolution system, or, you know.
I set myself the challenge to not only make something that could be played solo with Mothership, but also making something that would itself be a resource that players could use to try and solo other things in Mothership or
okay.
even within the sort of sci-fi genre, potentially. The thing I should say about all this is the game, well, the adventure, is completely written as an in-game document.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no references to first roll the dice and then see what the outcome is. It's all written as if you're a real-life operator working for this company. There's no references to playing a game. And more, I think that probably a lot of good game design is about knowing where to stop. It reminds me of something my dad's always said about haggling. To be a good haggler, you know, in a market or whatever, you need to know when to shut up. I think that's often the case of game design. And I like to leave a lot to the player. I like to try and empower them. It's a tricky balance because you don't want to just leave them out in the cold thinking, so what do I do now? I don't know. I don't have a clue what I'm doing. And so I've designed what I'm calling procedures to make that happen. One of which is an oracle, which is packaged up much in the same way as the semiotic standard.
In solo tabletop RPGs, the oracle is a narrative device that gives prompts that the player can use to write/play the story. Oracles come in many ways. They usually involve dice or cards or even a tarot deck and a table or list of prompts.
The oracle comes into play when you have questions as a player that aren't simply binary. They might be, what else is in this room, or what can I see, or how do these people react?
In Thousand Empty Lights, the oracle is a table of visual and textual prompts inspired by the semiotic standard. The semiotic standard, or more precisely, the semiotic standard for all commercial transstellar utility lifter and heavy element transport spacecraft, is a set of icons or visual signs designed by the artist Ron Cobb for the film Alien, or more precisely for the spaceship featured in the movie. These signs appear throughout all the movie, on doors, walls of the spaceship, and indicate in a graphical and simplified way possible hazards related to being in space.
So I've got things like heavy machinery, airlock, compressed gas, biological hazard, debris, flooding, magnet. And each of these has two little tags to go along with it that are less concrete. They're more suggestions of related things. So you might have slip hazard, which has in brackets uncertainty or motion, or navigation system, which has direction and guidance.
The cool thing about using a variation of the semiotic standard as an oracle is that it has visual cues. You can understand almost on a preconscious level what kind of threat your character is going to be exposed to just by watching the stylized signs.
And so that's what I'm trying to do with Thousand Empty Lights, trying to basically distill some of that, but also do it in a way that's going to make a resource that people can use outside of this adventure. They can use this semiotic standard for Mothership to play solo other adventures, or even use it in a group game to just inform things that might happen that are unexpected, for instance.
One of the key features in Mothership is its stress management system. It contributes so well to building the whole mood of the game. When your character is exposed to too much stress, they can panic. And whenever they panic, you'll roll on the panic table to determine the effects of that panic. For Thousand Empty Light, Alfred wrote a custom panic table.
In this adventure, panic stands for pneumatic and narcotic incident chart, because a lot of environmental hazards are based on being in a pressurized area, being at risk of things like the bends or nitrogen narcosis, which happens if you're working. Well, it happens when you're diving, but it also happens if you work in a caisson, which is basically a big structural tower that goes into the water that workers work in at pressure.
Which is what's happening here, as your character is working in an underwater tunnel.
And so the panic table, my version of it, a lot of the effects are based on real life effects you'd experience if you start experiencing decompression sickness or if you start experiencing nitrogen narcosis. And so that was a really fun thing to play with.
I imagine so. It sounds super exciting as a game device. And listen, the art, which is shown as a teaser for this new project, is really beautiful and it's all black and white. It has, I don't know, kind of psychedelic 70s touch, if I may say so.
Yeah.
Is the book going to be all black and white or?
Yes, yeah. In terms of a physical edition, I'm hoping to get it risograph printed. So it's all going to be nice, almost quite grainy black and white inside. And the covers are going to be a nice bright color.
And I was wondering, as the subtitle of the game is a psychedelic Xerox solo mothership pipe crawl adventure, I was wondering if you're planning to use like Xerox devices or copiers in your art creation process.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. And that was my initial intention. So far, I haven't, just because of time pressures. Trying to get stuff ready in time for Kickstarter has meant I haven't been able to go explore the Xerox machines in my local area, but that's definitely something I plan to do.
On the zine's Kickstarter page, you can see photos of the actual physical rewards. The zine has a cassette tip, a dust cover, and what's really striking to me is that they look so good, not only as games or as game accessories, but as objects.
I mean, this is me as someone who has a whole bunch of zines now, and I've read very few of them. I'm in love with objects.
Oh, you're a collector of zines?
I guess so. Without realizing it, I have become one. There's something about the physical nature of it. It's something about having something in my hands. And when I'm designing things, without even realizing, I think I'm designing first and foremost for physical. And sometimes that doesn't happen in the end, but that's always my starting basis, trying to imagine something in real life.
Mm-hmm.
The core proposition, that sounds very corporate in itself, doesn't it? That's quite appropriate. The core proposition for this Kickstarter is the game itself, which obviously be in a physical or a digital format. I've also commissioned a soundtrack from a friend of mine, someone I went to university with. His name's Gus BC, and he makes incredible off-kilter electronic music. I've given him basically the starting point of making a sort of weird motoric dungeon soundtrack. He's making stuff really quickly. It's all sounding fantastic. As well as that, offered digitally, I'm also hoping to do a limited run tape cassette release.
And this is a short excerpt of Gus BC's soundtrack for 1000 Empty Light.
And the thing I'm really excited about with that is I'm looking at packaging it in such a way as to be able to fit extra game content on the actual paper slip that comes with the tape, you know, the cover.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the idea is for me to write a whole extra sort of area of the game that you can access just by having the soundtrack to hand. And the final thing is something I'm still exploring, but I find very, very exciting, is I'm playing with this idea of including basically some code in the main zine, which you can only unlock by giving a sort of key, you know, like a string of letters and numbers. And
that code as in a cipher, you mean?
Yes, like a cipher, exactly. And so at a higher level, what I'm planning on doing is sticking or writing in every single one of those zines a different code, which means that every single person is going to get a unique message from that zine. And that message is a separate objective for your character to pursue.
That sounds extremely cool. So you've been researching encryption techniques like...
Yeah, I've had to get in contact with my cryptographer friend who has been instrumental.
You have a cryptographer friend, really?
I do, fortunately enough. And he's been really helpful. And I think he's going to continue to be helpful in me actually trying to make it work.
Wait a minute. You mean cryptographer as they are working as a cryptographer, like on a daily basis? Or
Yes.
That's amazing.
Just a lucky coincidence.
Okay, so you have like a real expert providing guidance on that part. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, can you tell us what kind of horror, like the characters of Thousand Empty Lights are going to confront in the tunnel?
I've deliberated on this for a long time, and the solution I found is, because a lot of what's informing the tone of your playthrough is the recordings or the transcripts of the person who came before you, and then that person is, as you are, subject to the risks of, you know, nitrogen narcosis, which often affects your sense of judgment or even your sense of reality, you're not quite sure what's real and what's not, because the information you've got to go on is incomplete, basically.
I see.
At the end of the day, what I'm most interested in is providing a way for the player to start writing their own story, essentially. So it's going to be a bit of actual physical horror and a bit of, well, whatever the player can imagine, really.
That was Alfred Valle, writer, artist, and publisher of Thousand Empty Lights. The game is in its final stretch on Kickstarter. Be sure to check it. I'll put the link in the show notes and on the episode page. You've listened to the Lost Bay Podcast, a show about indie tabletop RPGs and the people who make them. It's produced by me, Iko. Editing supervision is by Laura Elle. Music by Every Alice. This show exists thanks to the contribution of its patrons. If you want to help us grow, consider becoming a patron. Just head to patreon.com/thelostbay. Today, I want to do a big shout out to a British podcast I absolutely love. It's called The Nerd Alternative. It's a black British podcast about all things nerdy. The three hosts are super entertaining and deliver episodes packed with news and info and ideas about nerddom with an emphasis on representation. It's really a cool podcast. You can subscribe to The Nerd Alternative right now in your podcasting application or wherever you get your podcasts. And that's all for today. Thanks a lot for listening, and until next time, stay well.